Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport. My name is David Law. I'm here at the US Open on the middle weekend for BBC Radio 5 Live. I'm sitting here with Catherine Whittaker from Eurosport. We're keeping our voices down, Catherine, because this time we're not outside amongst the elements, we're in the radio room. And there's lots and lots of radio reporters here sending their reports all around the world. We've got Argentine people to our right. We've got French people to our left. We've got Craig Gabriel from Australia behind us. It's all happening from here. And Rafael Nadal, as we come to you, is in a bit of trouble. He's a set down. So we'll see how that one goes. But my goodness, there's already been a lot going on today.
Yeah, we've got very excited Argentine people to our right, haven't we? Because, yeah, Leo Meyer has won the first set against Rafael Nadal. A good set he played. I think Leo Meyer's probably played better sets and not been a set up against the world number one. Nadal just can't quite find it, much like Federer and, you know, insert name here.
Yeah, it's one of those weird slams, isn't it? I haven't found one as interesting as this for a long time in terms of just the feel of it. There's all sorts of results happening that I'm not expecting.
I tell you what, Brad Gilbert is getting good mileage out of the term winning ugly this tournament. I've watched a lot of ESPN coverage back in my hotel room, and he's obviously heavily involved in that, and the delight in his voice when he gets to whip that one out of the locker for the eighth consecutive match.
He's also getting to produce his various nicknames for players that people have never heard of before, that he's just been sort of working on throughout the year, and then when they suddenly become relevant, he's got them there.
Which is really annoying, because I came up earlier with what I thought was I hit my head earlier on a protruding air conditioning unit quite badly. I was really seeing stars for a while. But afterwards, I had a glorious French conversation with Marion Bartoli, best French I've spoken in years, and then came up with what I thought was a truly inspired nickname for Muguruza, Muguruthless, only to be informed that Brad Gilbert had got there first.
Yeah, I knew that, Catherine. I mean, you're way behind the time there.
Salt in my wound.
Oh, dear. Is that wound okay?
For a moment, I thought that I'd sort of, you know, one of those amazing stories where people wake up from a coma and they can suddenly play the piano. I thought that had happened to me.
Blimey.
But it turns out I've just sort of morphed into Brad Gilbert, which is a shame.
I see. Okay, well, tennis today. Karolina Pliskova, the world number one, is still in the tournament. But only just. She saved a match point today.
Yeah, and I was actually, I screenshotted a tweet last night because I just thought, you know, I have that in my back pocket as a talking point for the podcast. And the tweet was referencing Shapovalov being match point down to, and I'm hovering, Dutra Silva in the opening round in Montreal, and Angelique Kerber being match point down to Misaki Doi in the opening round of the Australian Open, and basically saying, would Shapovalov be in the fourth round of the US Open now had he not won that point? Probably not. Would Angelique Kerber have won that Australian Open and the subsequent US Open and got to world number one had she lost that point? Probably not. Tennis is about fine margins.
It is. It shows why you've got to hang in there, doesn't it? That these players that don't think it's over just because it's not going very well, it can be life-changing.
Yeah, long story short, though, I think it could be good for her. It'll harden her up a bit. I think that about whoever will come through tomorrow night's match, probably tonight's match by the time people are listening to this, between Muguruza and Kvitova, because neither of those two have been challenged at all. It's been breezy progress for them, for Muguruza-less.
Left arm's a bit of a concern, isn't it, though, for Pliskova? She had some treatment during the match on that.
But she said it was okay after the match, and, you know, everyone's saying they're okay and then retiring unceremoniously. But, you know, we have to take them at their word, I suppose. I'm not picking her to win the tournament, but I think the fact that she's come from match point down in that match, and she was gifted a bit by Zhang, who mentally, I think, let it go a little bit. I think it could be good for her in the end.
Yeah, may well be. Coco Vandeweghe, you were right, Catherine. My predictions lie in ruins.
No one's glorying over predictions today. An American chap came up to me, just shouted tennis podcast at the back of my head earlier, and I was still in my days post-headbang. And I turned around and he said, Catherine, love the podcast. Stop doing predictions.
No, we won't. Whoever you were who accosted Catherine, we're not going to stop. We're just going to keep doing it and maybe we'll get some right. But I have to say, I was hugely impressed with Vandeweghe. I watched the whole of that match. It was such a compelling contest because of the clash in styles. I didn't realise that Vandeweghe's record was 1-5 against Radvanska before that match.
Hang on, I assume that was why you were picking Radvanska for the final.
I didn't even know at least
there was that method to
it. I've got Vandeweghe losing earlier, I think. But anyway, I don't know. I mean, what difference does it make? I mean, you know, I'm just totally decimated as a predictor.
All flailing in the wind.
We are a bit, aren't we? But the performance from Vandeweghe, I thought, was really gutsy, because she's a player who, when she's on, I mean, she's a destructive player. Today wasn't about that. Today was about digging in and getting the result somehow. And you saw at the end when she high-fived Pat Cash on the side of the court, you could tell how proud he was that she'd found a way.
Well, he said, yes, I spoke to him earlier ahead of the match, and he said this is going to be the ultimate test of what we've been working on, right? The ultimate test of, you know, trying to replicate good Coco rather than bad Coco, you know, holding back when necessary, not feeling like you just have to fire all guns blazing from the word go, and if it doesn't work, thinking to yourself, well, it's not my day, then, you know, it doesn't have to be all or nothing. And she thought up until this point that it does have to be, and you're right, he really was proud. I'm not sure how proud he'll have been of her match point behaviour. So Radvanska challenged her match point shot, which landed long, and Vandeweghe was up. They were both up at the net by the time that happened. And once Hawkeye had had its verdict, instead of then going in for the handshake, Vandeweghe turned her back and decided to do her celebration and hitting balls into the crowd while Radvanska stood there and waited. And then she went in for the handshake. I'm fine with it because I love aggro, but I'd be a bit annoyed if I was Radvanska. And I've just provided you an excellent segue into Ostapenko, Kazakina, David.
Not half. If you haven't seen it, go and check out. I mean, poor old Yelena Ostapenko looked as if she wasn't too well today against Daria Kazakina. She went down heavily. It's the second time she's gone down heavily against Kazakina. She waited at the net for her opponent to arrive for the handshake. She extended her hand, and just before contact, she looked away and walked off, brushing the hand of Daria Kazakina.
The contact was brief.
Minimal. And Kazakina
out on YouTube.
Kazakina then shrugged and smiled. You just saw this brief little flicker of emotion and realisation that she'd just been blanked by Yelena Ostapenko.
There's backstory, isn't there? Because you referenced yesterday in preview of the match that they'd met in the final of Charleston earlier this year. And when we talked about that, I'd forgotten the speech, the runner-up speech that Ostapenko gave, where she just didn't go in for any of the customary paying tribute to her opponent. She just said, I played really rubbish today. I'm gutted. Bye.
Yeah. And not only does that mean that Catherine's dream match of Naomi Osaka against Ostapenko isn't going to happen, it's not going to happen in the worst way imaginable, because now Osaka's out as well. She's been defeated by Kaya Kanepi, who I didn't... I mean, this sounds terrible. I didn't even know she was still playing tennis at the moment.
I didn't either. My flatmate's Estonian, and we were talking about Estonian tennis players the other day, and she mentioned Kaya Kanepi because she was a big star in Estonia for a while, and I said, oh, yeah, she's not playing anymore. You've got Annette Kontaveit now, and I'm going to have to rectify the situation there because she's very much playing and winning.
She is, yeah. She beat her deep in the third set.
Ruining my plans.
Oh dear, Catherine Rettiger, furious, fuming here in the radio room. Andre Rublev was a winner today, and my goodness, he's getting more and more exciting by the day. And again, on the subject of Vandeweghe, he won it quite a hard way. He went two sets to love up, and unlike in the Dimitrov match, it wasn't all just downhill sort of cruising to victory. He lost the third set, did Rublev, and then finally managed to win it in four against Amir Zhuma of Bosnia. So, I mean, that was impressive in terms of maturity, I thought, for Rublev.
Yeah, absolutely. I was really impressed with him today. So impressed with his forehand. It's a great forehand, isn't it?
Violent.
Yeah, it's a great word for it. Who was it I was listening to talk about how impressed they were with him? Somebody wasn't. I think it might have been Boris Becker earlier, musing on how impressed he was with Andre Rublev. I know John McEnroe is very impressed. He's known him for a long time because they share an agent.
I think they've actually hit together a couple of years ago.
Yeah, a lot. No, John says he's known him since he was 15, I think, which obviously isn't that long ago. But I
he
think
he was born in 1997. Isn't that just?
But yeah, obviously McEnroe rates him. I'm pretty sure that McEnroe was brought in by the agent to talent scout and verify whether he was a talent worth bringing on board. So he's obviously got the McEnroe seal of approval, which is not worth nothing by any means. And, you know, he's not blown the big opportunity, has it? As so many have. You know, Osaka admitted it in her post-match press conference. She said, I got carried away after the Kerber victory. I allowed myself to look too far ahead. And, you know, we roll our eyes when we hear the I'm just taking it match by match, I'm not looking at the draw. You know, it's a nightmare for us, those kind of quotes. It's just not what we want to hear. But it's prudent. It's obviously prudent. And those that are successful in doing it, it shows how important it is.
It does. And so Andre Rublev is still in the draw. We'll have a look up who he's playing in a second because I can't really remember who it is. Juan Martín Del Potro is still very much in the draw. I tell you, talking about Martín Del Potro, to our left, as I mentioned, we have these Argentine journalists, and there was just a communal sigh going around the radio room because Leonardo Meyer has just blown two break points from 50-40. He's a set and 2-1 up, but that was a moment that our friends here in the press room didn't enjoy at all.
Andre Rublev will play David Goffin, against whom Guillaume Monfils retired with a knee problem earlier on today, trailing 5-1 in the second set after losing the first. So really disappointing semi-finalist last year. It's been a horror of a year, really, for Guillaume Monfils, but I'm delighted for Goffin.
Yeah, so am I. And that is going to be a spectacular match. I mean, both of those two, to use a phrase of Andy Roddick, you know, they both need to run around in the shower to get wet. They're so small, so slight. And but boy, they are so spectacular in terms of their shot making. You know, that they really have these fast arms like baseball pitchers. And I suspect we're going to get some extraordinary rallies in that one.
As we are in Dominic Thiem versus Juan Martín Del Potro.
Yeah, I think you just owe Dominic a little bit of an apology, don't you?
I do. It was down in that first set and I thought, here we go. Bad news, Dominic's going out. Good news, got my prediction right. He really dug deep. I still think he's playing clay court tennis on a hard court. When I see him take those huge swings standing 3 metres behind the baseline, I do think surely you're going to get found out at some stage. But Manarino's really tricky and he won in straight sets today and he had to fight, so I'll shut up. You know, he knows better than me, obviously.
Before we look ahead to tomorrow, Catherine, what on earth has Fabio Fognini been playing at? I mean, he has been fined $24,000 for things he said to Louise Engzel, the umpire in his singles match. I mean, from what I hear, he said things that are just indefensible to her. And the Grand Slam committee now has reacted further and suspended him pending an investigation, which could well lead to what they call a major offence. Now, that could be a seriously big fine. But that suspension now has taken him out of the doubles tournament. So effectively, he's been thrown out of the US Open, which I applaud the US Open for doing. I have to say, I'm pleased that they haven't just let this lie. This has been coming for a while. This is something that's become a theme in the career of Fabio Fognini. He put out a statement sort of apologising. But, you know, he from what I see, he is one of those red mist characters who speaks very charmingly at times off the court, and a lot of people speak well of him and like him, but when he's on the court, he turns into something that will say certain things that there is no excuse for under any circumstance.
Yeah, and I think creating that sort of disassociation isn't particularly helpful. It's still Fabio Fognini on the court saying, like, oh, he's a lovely guy off it. I mean, I know we're guilty of doing that with Andy Murray and disassociating his on-court behaviour with his off-court and you know, creating a sort of Jekyll and Hyde situation. We do that, but he's still the same person. And yes, he's put through a lot of stress. I get all of that. But, you know, anyone can be nice some of the time. It's whether you can be pleasant when you are under stress. And I think it's one thing, you know, being ratty and a bit unpleasant, but taking it out on other people, and, you know, goes without saying that all right-thinking people think what he said is appalling. And I'm impressed by the decisive action that's been taken. I do think there's a slight hint of sort of inconsistency in the way these things are dealt with. And obviously this is a very extreme example, and that's why it's been dealt with. But I was a bit surprised that it's been dealt with the way it is, because I've seen other sort of pretty bad incidents, not as bad, that have just been sort of overlooked altogether.
Just wonder whether maybe they've taken past record into consideration here. It's not like he has record for good behaviour that
no,
often,
not.
Does it?
I don't think he's built up an awful lot of credit over the years, put it that way. So yeah, you could well be right.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Just before we get on to the matches on Sunday, Catherine, has it been confirmed yet Serena Williams is a mum?
Not by her or her fiancé, so I assume that until it is. But goodness me, I hope she's not still in labour.
No, anyway, the reports say that she's given birth to a baby girl. So if she has, congratulations. Let's hope she hasn't. Let's hope all's fine. Anyway, matches on Sunday. We have Denis Shapovalov starting things off against Pablo Carreño Busta. I'm just flabbergasted that Shapovalov appears to be the third favourite for the title with the bookmakers. I mean, that just sounds crazy.
Which I asked Boris Becker about that earlier, and he said, that's a bit much, but he said, there's something about this guy. He said, "This, I've not seen this for a very, very long time." And he said, He's not my third favourite for the title, but he can win it.
Yeah. And actually, it takes me back to Queens when he won the match against Carl Edmund. I remember John Lloyd, who's obviously seen a lot of tennis, and he actually said he reminds me of Boris Becker in terms of the way he goes for his shots and the backhand, etc.
Yeah, and if it, you know, Boris Becker knows it can be done. Nobody thought he was winning Wimbledon.
That's a good point.
At 17, so he was the perfect person to ask about it, and he was very, very balanced. And as you know, I'm picking Shapovalov for that one, but by no means in a taking it for granted kind of a way.
I think I would probably pick Carreño Busta just with his experience and his durability. I just can't believe that this kid can keep doing this at that sort of level. I mean, I kind of hope he proves that wrong because he's such an exciting player. And again, Arthur Ashe Stadium court billing, and it shows the effect he's had on people.
Speaking of Arthur Ashe Stadium court billing,
Maria Sharapova is next up, straight up after that. We've had our say. Anastasia Sevastova had a win over Johanna Konta last year and is the sort of player actually that can cause Sharapova problems, I think, with her slicey, dicey game, you know, short backhands that draw her forward and stuff like that. It'd be interesting.
And speaking of slicey, dicey games...
Carlos Suarez-Navarro, is that you're thinking of? That's the third match on against Venus Williams.
Beautiful segues in this podcast. Yeah, a great women's order of play tomorrow, with no disrespect to the men's matches on Arthur Ashe, which I think match-wise could be great, but you know, the marquee names and the up-in-lights headline matches belong to the women tomorrow, that's for sure. Petra Kvitova against Garbiñe Muguruza. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, in the words of Chris Bradman.
Wow, yeah, absolutely right. But that is something to look forward to. And on the subject of Eurosport, you will be able to watch that match live on Eurosport. We'll be bringing you coverage as well on BBC Five Live. If you don't have a TV subscription to get Eurosport, go and get the Eurosport player. £9.99 until the end of September. You'll watch all of this stuff. It's awesome.
Yeah, you can watch every televised court in there. It is good. It is good.
So Petra Kvitova against Muguruza. I mean, I've got Muguruza winning the title, but she, you know, I don't think I'd really considered what a horrendous draw she's got. I mean, that is a match that if Kvitova's on, it's going to be really tough for her to win.
Well, I didn't either, because I didn't think Petra Kvitova was getting to this stage. As we talked about, she was so completely underhyped going into this, and you know, largely because she'd had no form on the US hard courts at all, so understandable to an extent. But she's been impeccable in the matches so far, and she's had a tough draw as well. Yankovic first round, Cornet second round, Garcia third round, not dropped a set, barely been threatened in any way. So that, I'm picking Muguruza because she's looked just ruthless.
Could be a cracking match, that.
Wow, yeah, wow.
And then after that, Misha Zverev against Sam Querrey. Well, Zverev's already beaten one of the big Americans, John Isner, last night. Straight sets. I was amazed by that, as you know, because anybody who listened to this probably heard me say that John Isner would win. But anyway, Zverev, who's just a fun player to watch because of the serve and volleying.
And spent 93% of his time yesterday in the forecourt volleying. 93% of his time. I mean, even, you know, back in the 70s and 80s, that would have been a lot. It's a total throwback. You know, see all of our comments from the Australian Open when he beat Andy Murray and went on the run there. But it's so, you know, there are some players, you know, serve and volley a bit, and we all talk about how nice it is to see Feliciano Lopez, a good example of that. But he does it every single point, first and second serve. He just is looking to come to the net every shot he hits, and it's a totally arresting sight these days on a tennis court. And I think he might win that. Don't know. I just,
no reason why he can't. I don't think Sam Querrey will particularly enjoy that style of play against him, so we'll watch it in interest. Sloane Stephens can't get on the Arthur Ashe Stadium court. That's an example of just how good those WTA matches are. There's more of those on the Arthur Ashe Stadium, and yeah, she can count herself a little unfortunate, really.
She absolutely, I mean, I'd have put her on Ashe, but ESPN would obviously rather have Sharapova.
I agree with you, actually, though.
On the other hand, though, I'm pleased, you know, if one of the women's matches had made way, given the attitude we know there is towards Sharapova, it probably would have been Venus, and I'm pleased that they don't do that to Venus, because we've talked on the podcast about how some slams I believe, don't show her or haven't always shown her the respect she deserves. And I think she's earned being on Ash for all of her matches, really. So I'd like to see Stevens on Ash, but I don't want Venus to be the one to make way.
No. So much to look forward to, and we will be back, maybe back a little bit later if Nadal or Federer lose. I mean, if you don't hear any more from us in this podcast, it's because they've won, because, you know, we'll sort of review those tomorrow. But loads to look forward to tomorrow. Do give us a review on iTunes if you've enjoyed this, and we will be back with you with more tomorrow.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.